Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing: share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdravstvuyte. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, bonjour. In Spain, hola. In Italy, ciao. In Egypt, ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, akwaba. In Nigeria, peleo. In South Africa, sawbona. In Senegal, nangadef. In Kenya, jambo. In Israel, shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia, assalamu alaikum. Greetings, and may peace be upon you all.
The Female Solution.
Hello?
TV show.
Yes. Okay, hold on. We're live.
With our team of hosts.
Okay.
Friday, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Time. Start your week with Monday morning mindfulness.
You know the way back.
Wednesdays, repairing broken families with Naima Latif and co-host Kareem Hamid. Thursdays, soulful solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. And Fridays, well-being with Beata. Saturdays, tune in 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Time. First Saturday, success strategies with Jana. Second Saturday, Wendy Williams Esquire on relationships. First Saturday, look around with Deborah. And fourth Saturday, wisdom with Mama D. Join us Sundays, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Time for Soul Purpose Healing with Beata. Call in and comment, 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak to the host and be a part. Grand Rising, and thank you all for joining us on this Saturday edition of the Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. We're talking about what's on everybody's mind today, the violence, what is happening, particularly with our young people. This is an epidemic, and too many families are struggling with the tragedy either of having a victim of violence or having a perpetrator of violence. And so much involves the legal system and the criminal justice system and the financial distress involved in fighting to stop what too many people don't understand what has been the cause of such an epidemic of violence. Well, today we've got with us award-winning filmmaker Valerie Goodloe. And she has been working with young people to help solve the problems, but more importantly, to give them a voice so that we understand how we can help to heal the pain. Thank you so much for joining us today, Sister Valerie Goodlow. We thank you so much for all the work you do.
Thank you, Sister, for having me call in, and hopefully, you know, maybe help shed a light on what we need to do as a community to change the climate, not just in Chicago, but all across the country.
And it most definitely is a nationwide calamity. Now, you have been an outstanding voice with your craft as a filmmaker, and now we're looking forward to an upcoming film that's going to give us some real insight and perhaps tug on our heartstrings a bit so we can make a choice to do something about it. And we want to be financially involved, because so much of what has to be done is going to involve us making the investment in our youth to help solve the problem. So tell us about the upcoming film and how we can be a part in helping to bring this issue to light.
Well, the name of the film is Before Your Time, An Unprepared Journey, and it's really about what happens when families lose their children to gun and gang violence and how trauma and grief affect the family, and not just the family, but the community as well. So there has to be something we need to do collectively to change the climate of what's going on in our communities, in our homes, and in our nation. We have a whole lot of things that are going on now that are about violence, and they're different in regards to how they're being committed. Some are these mass shootings where they just indiscriminately go into schools and different places and just shoot up everybody, and then they have the other ones that are maybe in our neighborhoods that are shooting children and grown people and families that are just walking down the street just trying to live life, you know. So we have a big epidemic, and some of these things have to be attacked differently, I think, but right now this film is really more concerning the family and what can we do to change our direction. A lot of times we talk about, you know, the first answer when you hear somebody say, well, it's systemic racism, it's poverty, you know, it's redlining and all these things. And those things are probably the deep-rooted causes of why the violence is. Poverty is violence. One of the ladies in the film that we're doing says that. But there's also a lot of other things that are going on that maybe causes a 10 or 11 or 12-year-old to pick up a gun and just indiscriminately shoot somebody.
The name of it is Before Your Time. The rest of it?
An Unprepared Journey.
An Unprepared Journey. Well, you know.
And go ahead.
Well, one of the things that people are asking is, where did all this anger come from so many who are so young? But as you've said, a lot of it is economic violence. What are some of the challenges that young people are facing when it comes to just basic survival?
You know, I would say, if you talk about economics, you can go anywhere around the world where there are maybe poor people, and it's not necessarily a violent community or violent things that are going on. But I think in our communities, because of displaced families, the blended families, mothers being the only one raising our children, fathers maybe not in the picture, not because they don't want to be, but maybe because of the relationship with that mother, he feels he can't be. We're just losing our children for far more things than just somebody ain't got no money. Our children are coming from homes that may have a woman who is working two jobs, There's no way for her to really know what's going on in the household when she leaves out to go to work. And then there's another family who may have a mother who is in a relationship with somebody who's not the relative to the child, and so there's discourse and anger in regards to that. You know, so there's a lot of things that cause our kids to be angry, but how angry can you be when you're 10 years old and you out carjacking somebody and you kill somebody? You know, that anger is getting younger. We have to look at what we're giving our children in their formative years. 1 to 12 is very important. And if they see violence, if they hear name calling, if they're being sexually molested, you know, you have to know that there's some things going on with our children that need to change. And a lot of times we'll have programs for our children, but what about for the parents? And I don't just mean parenting programs, but I mean supportive programs that help the parent recognize that there are things that they have to do in their household to change the climate. They don't victim, or like you said, a perpetrator, which is out up, because a parent that has a child that's out there doing that, that's a difficult situation. What do you do? Do you turn your child in? Do you turn your back? Do you put your head in the sand and pretend like what you know is happening isn't happening? Because that's what, even when I did the first film, Gang Girl, A Mother's Journey to Save Her Daughter, I was worried about my daughter being murdered, but I was more worried about her murdering somebody, you know, that she was going to take somebody else's child. You know, that was a real big concern of mine. And, you know, thank God her life has changed and she's not in that any longer. But if she had continued in that lifestyle, because she was a shot caller, that she would eventually have killed somebody or have been killed. So not only do we have to worry about the victims that are just going to school every day, but we also have to worry about the victims, you know, worry about the victims that are perpetrators, but they're victims of what's going on in their home.
What are some of the signs a parent can look for if their child is perhaps prone to violence? They're at that point of rage that they could pick up a gun and perhaps, you know, shoot someone.
Well, I think you have to know where your child is, and if you don't know where your child is, then that's a sign. If you have no idea where your child is, say after school, and you can't find them, that's what I couldn't do. I'd drive all over the city looking for her, and I wouldn't see her till maybe 7 o'clock. But between 4 and 7 o'clock, she was out doing, you know, doing things that could have caused her to be killed or kill somebody. You know, how they wear their clothes, how they keep themselves up, how, you know, if their grades are slipping, how they respond and talk to you. You know, are they involved in your household? Do you see them in the evenings? Do you see them on the weekends? Do you know where they're going? All these things have to be looked at if you really want to know what your child is doing. And that's the hard thing to say, because now they can get locked up in their bedroom and watch video games or get on the internet and find ways to increase their anger and their violence, even just by shooting, you know, playing those video games where they carjacking and murdering people. They get desensitized to that. They're desensitized to the violence because they're being maybe hit across the head at home or called names. You know, so you have a lot of things that you have to look at if you want to almost ensure that your child is going to not fall into the path of being a perpetrator or even a victim. You know, like we have our children, and we can talk about them going downtown to Chicago, you know, going downtown to the Bean. Okay, they're 14, 15 years old, and maybe a parent might get mad. Well, how come they can't be down there? But if, I mean, really, if they're 14 or 15 years old and it's 11 o'clock at night, I mean, should they really be out there on a school night? Do you know where your child is?
There are a lot of parents who, you know, maybe some parents either work late or go to sleep early or stuck in front of the TV set and not paying attention. For me, a lot of parents don't have any idea where their children are 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night. And they don't know how to actually change the behavior. I mean, they might fuss and holler, but they don't know how to get their children to stop hanging out. Maybe the communication is broken down. You've got a child that's a teenager, and they're in their cell phone all the time, totally zoned out, not communicative. How can parents reach a young person who's still in their home, still underage, and get them to follow rules of staying in the house and staying away from danger when that's the popular thing to do? And parents, they feel like, well, I can't hit my child. I can't make them do what I want. That's supposedly against the law. So what can I do to make them do what I want? What would you say to a parent who has that question?
Okay, look, and let me kind of like clarify things. I don't want to look as if I'm attacking a parent. I'm talking to you as a parent that did or did not do the things that was necessary for my children necessarily to be successful. I was a mother that had three different sets of kids by three different babies, you know, baby daddies, as you call it. I was on drugs, alcohol, I used. You know, there was things that I incorporated into my home that the direct results was things that I didn't want my children to do. I looked at my children, well, how come you're doing this? But then I looked at my own self. I had to see that there was things that I was doing and not doing that was going to have – that I would have successful children, you know. And luckily, I quit drinking and using early when my kids were pretty young. And so through programming and counseling and other things, I learned that some of the things that I was doing was detrimental to my children, you know. So even like having dinner at the table and not doing those things, you know, having my daughter go out and buy a bag of weed and bring it back to the house. You know, I was doing things that were not conducive of children being successful. And a lot of times, and I blame it on my group of people, I'm a baby boomer, and so what I did was I dropped the ball. I dropped the ball. Things that I should have passed down to my children that I learned from my parents, I didn't pass it down. You know, and that's what's going on. If you don't know something, you can't pass down something that you don't know. And so I think I always say this, when the Isaac Brothers came up with "It's Your Thing, Do What You Want to Do," that's exactly what my group of people did. We did our thing. We did what we wanted to do. We forgot about values and principles and maybe having one relationship with one person, you know, making sure that our children were our children and not necessarily our friends, where we were out there getting drugged and drinking and drugging with our children. Those are the things that we started doing. Those are the things that we started initiating into the younger group of families. Just to say this, I had a young lady that I was mentoring here for about 4 years, and she was a little gangster, but she was very smart and everything else. But there was things that no matter what I would try to convey to her or tell her, she just couldn't grasp it. And so she got killed last year. She went into a situation where people told her, maybe you don't need to go to this party. She went anyway and got killed. And I was watching this Tina Turner film, and they asked Tina Turner, why did it take you 30 years for you to get away from somebody who was kicking your ass, who was treating you bad, not treating you like the woman that you should have been? What was it? She said that when she grew up, that she could not rise above what she was not taught. So here we are today with that same thing. Our children are not given things that they need in order to be successful and to survive. You know, we're on if you look at black folks in America, there's three phases: existing, surviving, and living. And we have not even got past the survival stage yet. Most of us are existing. And our children, we say, well, you know, they made a choice. How, I mean, I think that that's not really right, because here there's a lot of children that are getting away from horrific situations, and they feel that they're doing what they need to do to survive or even to exist. You know, our young men now are just the same thing that's happening to them that was initially happening to a girl. The boys are being raped. They're being sexually molested. They're being called names. And so here you have a 10-year-old boy who's angry. He might look at another little 10-year-old boy and say, well, shit, he's happy. I don't want him to be happy because I ain't happy. So I'm going to kill his ass. So we have to really look at what's going on with our families. The family, home is where the story begins.
Home is where the story begins. So profound. No, I was having a conversation about that, and one of the things that we were looking at was we're the baby boomer generation. We're the generation where a lot of the drug culture started, and then we had children when we were not in our right mind and culturally disconnected and trying all these different things, and then the children that we raised, they didn't get the guidance. They had children early before they even knew who they were, and, you know, they may have experimented with drugs, and so then those children were not raised properly, and then they had children because they did not have guidance. So we've got, like, third-generation misguided children, abused children, neglected children, angry children, and, you know, we can go back a couple of generations and see where the roots are. And so one of the things my friends pointed out was that this generation of children, they don't have, like, you know, Big Mama who was the rock in the family and, you know, taught all the cultural values and, you know, you learned at her kitchen table and she gave you some kind of why you exist and the struggles of the family and how you have to succeed. I mean, none of that. What this generation has is, you know, grandma who's still out at the clubs or still getting high or, you know, got a lot of boyfriends. I mean, they don't have that person that was the stable family matriarch and no patriarch, because that was the generation where the men disappeared. I mean, you had the Vietnam vet fathers who came back home strung out and PTSD rampant, you know, all of that. So there isn't a foundation for this generation. Based on what you have talked to with children who just really don't have a clue as to what they're supposed to be doing, how do we create a foundation? How do we build what isn't there? Is there a way to correct the damage?
I think so. I think that there is always a way, and there always should be hope with our parents and with our youth. My whole thing is that we have to work with both. A lot of people, a lot of organizations today don't want to work with the parents. They just want to work with the youth. But when they do that, they might have great programming for a child. And when that year is over with, if the program is even that long, once that program is over and they walk back home into that same environment where the yelling and the screaming and the hollering is, or where there's no parent in the household, or where there's violence in the household, drugs in the household, then whatever you've given that child during that whole year's program is just going to be lost. Maybe some may survive and be able to grab hold to some of those things that is going to keep them or make them successful. But if we don't start working with our families, then we're not. I don't think things are going to change. I think that we can go out here and try to do all we need to do, get rid of the guns, get rid of this, do that with the youth. But if we don't start working with our parents and letting them know that they have help, that they have a way to get something that they haven't already gotten themselves. Because if you look at being a recovering addict and alcoholic myself, I started drinking and using when I was 11, 12, 13 years old. So at that particular time, that's when my growth stopped. So here we are. We got a whole society of grown-ups today that been drinking and using and doing whatever since they were 12 or 13, so they need to be retaught or taught things that they were not given themselves. And that may be a hard job, but that's the job that we have to do. There's millions of dollars now being poured into stopping gun violence, but you have to stop the violence in the home first. I mean, you have to be able to show that the children have different alternatives, that they don't have to go to violence as an answer. And that may be a rough job, but, you know, I mean, if we want to change this, that's what we're going to have to do because it's not getting any better. It's not getting any better. And even with the gun thing, my thing is, why can't they control the bullets? Everybody out here got a gun. You can't even walk down the street with somebody who ain't got no damn gun. So why can't we stop the flow of bullets? If a gun ain't got no bullets, then the gun can't shoot nobody. He might be able to hit somebody across the head with it, but that, you know, most likely he ain't gonna kill somebody with it.
It makes
so there's a lot of things that happen.
Real simple. Well, your film, Before Your Time, An Unprepared Journey, what are some of the things that people can do to bring this revelation to light so that it can be a teaching tool, a tool that can give us more insight, more inspiration? How can people get involved with this, and when will it be shown so that the preview of it be shown so that people can come and participate in helping to solve the problem?
Well, the film, we need to get the film finished. We are a nonprofit organization, and we are right now in the process of having a fundraiser tomorrow to help raise the money to finish the film. We've been shooting now for 5 or 6 years, but we need to be able to edit it and do other things. And unfortunately, with COVID, in the past couple of years, we haven't really financially raised much money in regards to Window, the organization, to continue to finish our editing. So tomorrow we're going to have a fundraiser event at the Wild Blossom Winery and Meadery over at 9030 South Hermitage from 4 to 7. It is a fundraiser, but we will be showing a portion of the film. And this film has got a lot more to do, not just with the violence, but the aftermath, what happens to a family when they lose their children or their brother or sister to gun violence, and to see the aftermath of that. You know, a lot of times we put a lot of emphasis on trying to, redirect the perpetrator, but we also have to find ways to help the victims, because if they're not helped, then they could end up being a perpetrator, a victim of gun violence, just the same way that their family member was. You know, we also find that through the violence and stuff like that, that families break up. Grief is different. You know, so this film will also talk about grieving processes and trauma, and how do we get through that as a family and as a community.
Very powerful story, and it needs to be heard, and it needs to be shown. And you who are concerned about violence, you need to be there to give money to put it to the big screen so that all of us can think about how we can stop this scourge of violence that makes our young people leave here before their time. So now that is Sunday. What time does it start?
4 to 7 o'clock.
4 p.m.
And if anybody, to 7. And if anybody's interested, what now?
I was just going to say.
4 to 7.
That's 9030 South Hermitage. Is that correct?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And you were going to say?
What I was going to say, that hopefully this may, it would be great if we had somebody that just came in and gave us $1 million to finish the film. But most likely, everybody's struggling just like we are. So if anybody may be interested in helping us with fundraising to get the film done, or if they then come out and watch the film and see maybe is it worth it to do that. You know, I wouldn't want somebody to donate something and they're not knowing what they're donating to. So it would be good if anybody wants to donate, they come out and watch the film.
All right. Well, we definitely urge all of those who have been in the trenches working to try to solve the problem or understand it or even have money and they want to know where they can put money toward that would help in the process of healing the pain, go to, this is this Sunday, which is June 12th, 9030 South Hermitage in Chicago, 4 to 7 p.m. And we've got a comment on our Facebook page from Deyada Robinson that says, Billie Holiday and Nina Simone suffered the same type of abuse as Tina Turner. Very interesting that Tina pointed to her childhood experience as the reason she tolerated it. Yes, that tends to be the roots of perpetrating and accepting violence. It starts in the home, and that is a major
right.
thing. And looking forward to this film. I know you've got to leave us because you're on your way to make some things happen, and we certainly are looking forward to having you come back in the future and give us a progress report. And we're going to work on raising funds throughout the show today, reminding people where they can go. Is there a website they can go, a GoFundMe?
Yes, we do have a website. Yeah, we have a website. It's windoworganization.org. windoworganization.org.
All right.
And it talks a little bit about what the program, what we do. We don't just... we're not just working on a film. We collaborate with other organizations that have programs for families.
All right, and that is a very key thing because this is a family affair, and families are affected, whether you're on the victim side or the perpetrator side. There is grief because a life has been destroyed. And
yes.
we want to get the hurt. Stop pain and repair the damage and rebuild. We definitely appreciate the work that you're doing, dear Sister Valerie
thank
Goodlow,
you, sir.
Bringing this word. So thank you so much, and we'll let you continue on your day. We'll be fundraising throughout the day. We'll be steering them to this website and to the fundraiser tomorrow. So we look forward to it, and we'll certainly come through and give some money. All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, sis. All right.
All right. Have a great day. And we're going to take
you.
A quick break. All righty. And that was Valerie
right.
Good filmmaker. And thank you so much. Look forward to seeing you tomorrow. All right.
All right. Sounds good. Right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And we are definitely urging that those who are concerned make sure that they get involved. That's the only way we solve the problem. We'll be right back after this quick break. And later on in the show, we're going to be joined by attorney Wendy Williams, candidate for Cook County Judge, who has spent a lot of years in the field of education, and she has some insight on how a poor education is often the cause and definitely a major factor in the spread of youth violence. What are we not teaching? We'll be right back. When we come back, we're going to share with you a clip about a school district that decided to bring back paddling in school. What do you think about that? Do we need to fight violence with violence? We'll be right back after this quick break, so we want you to stick and stay. Don't stray away. We'll be back in just a moment, so stay with us.
We have an opportunity to transform the whole global society in the next 50 years. 50 years from now, the Earth will be populated by a new generation of adults, many of whom are yet unborn. Our mission is to nurture them in childhood with love, guidance, and protection, and to raise them in healthy, happy families. If we impart values of compassion, generosity, and respect for fellow human beings in the next generation of children, they will create a world where people can live together in peace. This is our goal. Be a part of the transformation. Get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. Go to www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com.
Are you constantly arguing with your spouse? Are your children misbehaving and acting out? Is someone in your family abusing drugs? Have you been the victim of domestic violence? Are you grieving over the loss of a loved one? Let us help you restore serenity to your life. At Serenity Family Social Services, we understand that good mental health is the result of emotional well-being. Our goal is to assist you and your family in removing emotional distress and restoring harmony and balance to your lives. We offer individual, couples, and family counseling. I'm Howard Williams, CEO of Serenity Family Social Services. Call us today at 312-315-4820. That's 312-315-4820.
Everything you need, what your body needs, is found in nature. So Susan Essentials doesn't do it any other way. Susan Essentials provides your employees and individuals access to over 20,000 nutritional products, and they are shipped direct to your door. Because Susan Essentials is certified in plant-based healing, we're permitted to offer you the best nutritional supplements on the planet. They're non-GMO and sustainably produced, and we take the guesswork out for you. Let Susan Essentials help you take control of your health today.
Hi, this is John Alexander.
And I'm Naim Latif. Meet people like you who are making a positive difference in the world.
Big difference.
Watch us every day on The Media Connection at www.youtube.com/TheMediaConnectionTV.
YouTube it. We'll see you soon.
There are people who choose to make a positive difference in the world. Our job is to bring you their stories to motivate you to do the same. Join us each week, host John Alexander and Naima Latif, as we bring you the educators, entertainers, elected officials, religious leaders, and community activists whose works are transforming this world. Find out how you can make a difference, too. Be inspired. Watch The Media Connection. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, Three Black Moms.
Crime in Chicago continues to increase. Communities and politicians must come together to make a change. No one person can solve these problems by themselves, but I believe together we can make progress. Let's provide job training, economic growth, and invest into our 77 community. Let's rebuild and restore Chicago. Vote for me for mayor of Chicago. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for Mayor.
To and watching the Female Solution Global Radio TV show. I'm Naima Latif, and in a little while we're going to be joined by Attorney Wendy Williams, candidate for Cook County Judge. And as you know, she has been striving to help people make good decisions when it comes to relationships because, as we just heard from our guest filmmaker Valerie Goodloe, the foundation of the problem starts in the home. And if you have people who are dysfunctional coming together and having children and they are abusive to the children, this is what starts the cycle of violence. Many people are unaware of the effects of domestic violence. And domestic violence isn't just a husband hitting a wife. It's parents beating their children. And we have often talked about how this behavior is not discipline. Discipline is training to act in accordance with rules. But if traditionally you have been beaten for whatever infraction as a means to control your behavior, then you don't know that you're creating a person whose suppressed rage is going to explode at someone at some point. And it may be a deadly act of violence. Now that we have access to guns, because the gun manufacturers and sellers want to make a profit, they don't care that the gun they issue forth gets into the hands of an angry 12-year-old or a frightened 12-year-old who's trying to stop being bullied, or an abused 12-year-old that wants to fend off and prevent another sexual assault. They don't care, and society is unaware. So violence as a means to curb violence that was initiated by violence cannot possibly be the answer. And yet some people believe it is. So we want to share with you a clip that appeared on Facebook about a school district that votes to bring back paddling as a means of so-called discipline. And the whole idea is that if people are allowed, if school teachers are allowed to hit students that are misbehaving, then there will be enough fear where the children will not misbehave and teachers will have more control. That's the idea. And that was the idea when schools were allowed paddling before. And I've heard many adults say that if we could just bring back spanking in schools, that would solve a lot of these problems. I'm hearing that. I'm hearing a lot of adults voicing that opinion and strongly believing that this is something that can solve the problem of youth violence. We want to get your thoughts on that, especially because when you have school districts that are voting for this kind of behavior, it can very easily set a trend, and then, especially in some private schools, and it's known that private schools have, especially Catholic schools, I know many friends whose stories of the nuns paddling them still give them nightmares, but they remember those times of getting beat, and they remember that it was something that was fully supported by parents. So if we're believing that hitting our children is the answer to stopping them from hitting other children or even shooting other children, does that really make any sense? Well, we want to take a look at this thought because it is a thought that is widely shared. And if we're believing that more violence can actually stop the violence, then what's going to happen when we see the results of more violence? So in this story, it says school district votes to bring back paddling for disobedient students. Do you support this? And there are a number of comments that indicate there are people who do, in fact, support the idea that we should bring back paddling, and they believe that this will stop some of the misbehavior. People are believing this. And unfortunately, there are many who might even advocate that other school districts follow suit. So now this story was written by Britton Hambleton, a freelance contributor, and this is something that certainly will trigger people who are angry as it is when children are violated in schools. But also it's one of those stories that gets a lot of attention because it has been advocated often that teachers need to have more authority to use corporal punishment. So it says, as most parents know, disciplining even one child can be hard enough, let alone a whole room of them. This is the daily reality of school teachers who have to somehow remain in control of a classroom of up to 30 or more kids every day of their working lives. Child discipline is one of the greatest challenges schools face, and over the years there have been different strategies used to keep students in line. For many years, the use of physical punishment, such as hitting or whipping students, was common in schoolhouses across America, but in the last few decades, it's been replaced by punishments that are less violent. Not too long ago, however, a few schools in Texas have reintroduced the antiquated method. In 2017, three schools in Texas reintroduced corporal punishment to discipline children. Under the new policy, staff in the Three Rivers School District are able to use a wooden paddle to beat disobedient students, administering one paddling for each misdemeanor. Parents are asked at the time of enrollment whether or not they consent to have the punishment used for their child. Andrew Amara, the school's campus behavior coordinator, was paddled when he was a student, a punishment he says worked for him. He hopes that this change will be more effective punishing be a more effective punishment than detention for children between the ages of 4 and 12. It was an immediate response for me, he said. I knew that if I got in trouble with a teacher and I was disrespectful, whatever the infraction was, I knew I was going to get a swat by the principal. Now, the story goes on. This policy, which was agreed upon unanimously by the Board of Trustees, only allows behavior coordinators and the principal to use the paddle on students. At the time it was approved, the staff was going to be tracking the number of child discipline referrals that were made and compare that to the number from the previous year. If the number went down, they will have considered the policy to be a success. Is paddling students in, or other forms of corporal punishment effective in schools? According to the National Association of School Psychologists, corporal punishment is defined as, quote, the intentional infliction of pain or discomfort and or the use of physical force upon a student with the intention of causing the students to experience bodily pain so as to correct or punish the student's behavior, unquote. But is this form of punishment effective? The science says no, and it can cause damage in the children beyond physical discomfort. Research has determined that children who were subjected to, quote, normal amounts of physical punishment when they were young often demonstrate higher levels of aggressive behavior when they got older. These children also showed higher rates of delinquency and spousal assault later in life. This is because corporal punishment models aggressive behavior, which teaches children to solve problems with violence. This can lead to bullying and other behaviors that rely on having power over someone else. A study in the journal Pediatrics reported that harsh physical punishment such as spanking, pushing, grabbing, and paddling was associated with an increased instance of mood disorders, anxiety disorders, substance abuse, and personality disorders. This holds true regardless of whether or not the kind of punishment was considered child abuse. It still placed children at a higher risk for mental illness. Now, of course, this report goes on, but I wanted to give you that insight, basically to take a look at where we're going as a nation. Now, it's significant that this was passed in a school district in Texas where we just had a mass shooting. So what does that tell us? We're thinking that violence can actually stem the tide of violence when it's probably, based on scientific studies and statistics, violence in the home is what starts the violence outside the home. When you have households where children are neglected, abused, assaulted, berated, belittled, and caused physical, psychological, and emotional pain, they then inflict that pain on others because that's the behavior that was modeled for them. How are we not getting this? How are we not understanding that non-love only increases the expression of non-love? You cannot use violence to stop violence. In order to transform a lower behavior, you have to use a higher behavior, a higher conscious behavior. The absence of love is what created the violence. So love, care, compassion, loving correction and guidance, and modeling loving behavior has to correct the problem we created with our unloving behavior. It's hard for people to understand that because they have not seen it demonstrated in a culture that promotes power over others as a means to control behavior. And how's that working for us? As Dr. Phil asks, how's that working for you? Beating your child because they talk back to you, beating your child because they come in too late, beating your child because they got bad grades, beating your child because you found out they're taking drugs, beating your child because you found out they're having sex, beating your child because they got in a fight at school, beating your child because you don't like their attitude, beating your child because they didn't clean their room, beating your child because they didn't do their chores, beating your child because they ran away from home, beating your child because they stayed out too late, beating your child because you don't like the way they poke their lip out at you, beating your child because someone beat you. How's that working for you? How's that working for any of us? What are we experiencing? What are our children showing us? They're a mirror to us. And all of the pain we have given them, they're giving back to us. So is the answer to give them more pain? Well, we want you to call in 515-605-9325 and press 1 when you have your thoughts together, because we want you to express them. We are a society that is in a state of confusion because we're seeing the manifestation, as we just got through talking about with filmmaker Valerie Goodlow. We're seeing the manifestation of several generations of parents who didn't have wisdom. And we're believing that if we go back to the old ways that were damaging, that that is best. But what caused that generation that became the drug generation to take the drugs? Well, you take drugs in order to escape emotional pain. So if we're escaping emotional pain, that means someone gave us emotional pain. So then do we go back to the means of inflicting emotional pain in order to solve the problem in the next two generations of children that we abused because we were out of our minds, because we were stoned on drugs to try to get rid of our emotional pain? At some point, do we learn that we have to stop inflicting pain on children, and we have to heal the pain that's inside of us, and not by using drugs or alcohol or sugary foods, because that's an addiction as well, or any of those things to try to make us feel better after we've been made to feel bad by the ones who we needed to show us love? This is a solvable problem, but we have to use the right tools, and that means understanding what those tools look like. So we want those who need an insight on how to heal from the pain of violence that has occurred in their lives to be a part of the film fundraiser and be a part of the solution to the acts of violence. Watch the film Before Your Time, An Unprepared Journey. It's going to be held on Sunday, June 12th, from 4 to 7 p.m., 9030 South Hermitage in Chicago. And be prepared to give some money. Think in terms of $50, $100, $150, or whatever you can give, but most certainly it is for the purpose of helping us understand. This is a film where we hear the voices of those who have, in fact, been a part of this unprecedented wave of crime and violence, and those families who have suffered either as being parents of those who perpetrated violence or those who have inflicted violence. They are telling their story in a way that helps us to see that all of us are affected. all of us are involved and all of us have to be a part of the solution. But we need to hear the voices. And if you have had violence in your family, if your family has struggled with the pain of loss, you need to come to this film. Again, 9030 South Hermitage. Hermitage is West Side Street, near West. Hermitage, 9030 South Hermitage is where the film will be shown, 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. tomorrow, Sunday. And this is a fundraiser to finish this important film. So it's going to be a bit of a preview as well as a discussion. And this will be an opportunity for people to even understand how families need to heal after they have experienced the pain of violence. We can't keep blaming the children for what we have created in them. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to take calls and hear from Attorney Wendy Williams, 314-677. Hold on, we'll be right back after this quick break. And if you're listening online and want to join this conversation, give us a call, 515-605-9325, and press 1 when you're ready to speak. And if you're on our switchboard now, press 1, 314-677, coming to you next right after the break. And we'll be joined by Attorney Wendy Williams, Esquire, who is candidate for judge in Cook County. We'll be right back after this quick break. So stick and stay. Don't stray away. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Barbara.
I'm Cheryl.
And I'm Naima. We're three black moms. And in case you didn't notice the resemblance, we're also three sisters.
We're going to be coming to you every week, sharing our successes and our mistakes as we navigate our lives as moms, wives, sisters, daughters, and, of course, black women in today's world.
We'll talk about it all. Race, politics, religion, economics, culture, and we'll take a look at everything from whether or not to use corporal punishment to how do you teach your children about sex.
Look for our upcoming book, Growing Up Charles. It's a personal story about our lives growing up in Maple Park on Chicago's South Side. I'm Barbara.
I'm Cheryl.
And I'm Naima. We're three black moms. Follow us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel, Three Black Moms.
In to Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green on Thursdays at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time and 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time to hear great topics and stories on grief and turn you into victory. Join Dr. Debbie Green to listen to stories of triumph and learn how to overcome. You are not alone in your life, and there is hope in the darkest hour. This is your time to learn strategies and solutions to improve your life. It's your time. So join Dr. Debbie Green with Soulful Solutions and call in on Thursday at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time and 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time at 515-605-9325 with comments and questions. Look to hear from you real soon.
Our kids are the future and should not be left behind. One person should not decide what is the best for our 77 communities. Politicians must work together for our kids' best interests. They deserve a safe education with resources that meet every student need. Let's rebuild and restore Chicago. Vote for me for mayor of Chicago. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson. Now approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for Mayor.
And we are... you're listening to and watching the Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. I'm Naima Latif. And let's go to our phone lines, area code 314-677. Introduce yourself to our listening and viewing audience and give us your thought. What are your thoughts about the bringing back the paddling in school districts to make children behave? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, this is Mr. Pianchi. From the Midwest out of South.
Okay. What do you I want to hear your opinion. What are your thoughts about bringing back spanking in schools to make children be more obedient and respectful? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, let's talk about schools. I think that district, that's the parents' decision of the school district.
Yes.
And
parents agree.
I think there's something wrong with people mentally when they think parents should not have the jurisdiction over their schools, over their children, like we see so many attacks on parents that show up at school board meetings and expressing their disapproval of the reading material with illustrations of sexual content that is being offered in the school building libraries. Something wrong with them mentally when they are constantly told we don't want that for our children, but yet still they put it in anyway. Now, I was looking at the academic performance of Three Rivers High School compared to Chicago's math and science. And Three Rivers High School have a graduation rate over 90%, Chicago math and science about 65%. And then when you look at the performance in math and reading, Three Rivers is above the 50 percentile, where Chicago math and science is less. So maybe there's a need for this type of expression as it comes down to discipline your children. Maybe it's something that can be learned. Because the Three Rivers, their demographics is about 60% Hispanic and the rest white. There's no black children to mention. Whereas in Chicago math science, you got, what, about 90% black students in there. So I don't know. I think it's the parents' ultimate decision. Because they had the child, and it's their child, their choice. That's my opinion.
Their child, their choice. Well, hold on. We may come back to you for more comments as we bring on our next guest attorney, Wendy Williams, who is candidate for judge in Cook County. And she's got a long history in education where she has often lectured and certainly has shared her insight on how when the family is dysfunctional because the couple who had the children is dysfunctional, then we produce dysfunctional children. So do we punish them? Do we beat them? Do we hit them because perhaps they're mirroring our own dysfunctional behavior? And what is the real root to this expanding youth violence that's happening across the nation? Well, we want to welcome to our show this morning my dear sister, attorney Wendy Williams, candidate for judge in Cook County. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Female Solution. And for those who are listening online and want to join this conversation, you need to give us a call, 515-605-9325, and press 1. And if you're a voter in Cook County, you need to be voting. You need to make sure that you are registered. Well, yeah, you should have registered to vote. But you need to participate in selecting people who have some type of experience and wisdom behind their decision-making capacity, because that's what's needed. So, Wendy, and make sure you take your mute. Wendy Williams, attorney Wendy Williams, has spent over 30 years in family law. And our first guest, filmmaker Valerie Goodlow, speaks of how we, this baby boom generation, we're also the drug generation, the free love generation, the generation that wanted to change the culture but didn't quite have the knowledge to make the right kind of changes. We may have grown up with corporal punishment and spankings and switches off the tree limb and belts and all these things, and we might have lived in a state of fear, or our mothers, or our grandmothers, or our fathers, we might have lived in that state of fear. And we might have believed that fear was what kept us from being violent. But when you become a drug addict, you're inflicting violence on yourself. When you plant violence in a child, it gets expressed somewhere, either at someone else or at themselves. So if we're in pain and we're using drugs to get rid of the pain, and then we are dysfunctional, too dysfunctional to be in a healthy relationship, but we either impregnate somebody or get pregnant, and so we have a child and we're not in our right mind enough to be able to properly guide them with wisdom and love, we're instead chasing our next high or our next sex escapade or expressing our frustration at this little helpless person by hitting them, then we really were not setting the best example. And Valerie was very candid in her sharing the fact that while she had her children by different fathers, she also was going through her addiction struggles. And so the impact of that caused her children then to get into the gang, the violent lifestyle, and she understands the root of it. So if we are now seeing our children tangled up in the criminal justice system, committing acts of violence and what seems like random violence, and Valerie also talked about the using violent games in the home and using violence to control behavior in the home, and then acting violently toward each other, men and women fighting in the home, calling police on each other in the home, beating each other up in the home. All of this is in our home. So what's happening in our home? Well, we see it being expressed in the children. So some children go to school to escape a dysfunctional home. So if you're going to school and the teacher, who you're assuming has all of this wisdom and patience and insight, is given the power to beat you. I don't care what you call it, paddling, spanking, you're beating a child. And who knows, if you didn't have a bad day and you had an argument with your spouse, and so now you want to take it out on this little child who, you know, maybe talked out of turn, didn't raise their hand, or maybe they're talking to their friend, or maybe they're playing around and you're just tired of it, and so you decide you're going to paddle them. Is that really helpful? Oh, so now the child's got to be afraid, even at school, of getting assaulted. Is that helpful? And so this child gets labeled bad, and then they're on the road to the pathway to prison. And we watch it happen. And then, of course, you're in the criminal justice system, and you're behind bars with other people who've been dysfunctional and responding to violence, and you're subjected to beatings and sexual assault. And then you come back to the community further damaged. This is the cycle that we put in motion. So do you think doing more of the same is going to get us anything more than the same? Well, we want to hear from you all. Give us a call, 515-605-9325. We're going to open up mics, but we want to hear from Attorney Wendy Williams, whose insight on human behavior as a lawyer in the family law courts gives us some understanding of what happens when people who really aren't emotionally well are raising children and damaging children, and how it really is all of our business. So, Attorney Williams, what have you observed as a pattern when you see certain young people constantly in trouble with the law? What is one thing that you've observed that tends to be a commonality in their experience, perhaps the reason why they explode in violence. Give us your thoughts on that, please. Check your mute, Attorney Williams. She may have had to step away for a moment.
Thank you. Thank you. Hi. Thank you. Hello, everyone out there. This is Wendy Williams, and thank you for having me on the show, Naima.
Well, thank you for being willing to share your wisdom. People are desperate and not knowing what to do. We just shared the report of a school district that voted to bring back paddling in the school as a means of discipline. So they got this wooden paddle, you know, for whatever infraction, school officials are allowed to beat the children with a paddle, and they feel that this is going to be a means of correcting behavior. But what have you observed that tends to actually be at the root of a lot of frustration and anger that children end up expressing as violence?
You know, Naima, I think I told you the story once about a client of mine, and I couldn't understand sometimes the police reports and the contents in the police reports. In fact, I can remember looking at a police report, and it was written in a penmanship or handwriting that was almost perfect. And I said, wow, my client really has a perfect penmanship. And then at the bottom, though, I see a signature that looked like someone who was just drawing X's or could barely write. And so I asked the client, I said, why don't you read this police report to me? And I found out he couldn't read, that statement, his so-called confession, was actually written by the police officer, and that he barely signed it and never read it, and no one ever asked him, did he know how to read? As you know, Naima, I have spent most of my life focusing on education because I believe knowledge is power when you use it correctly, but you got to have it to use it at all. And our communities are kind of deficient in a lot of the basic skills. I remember watching MTV Cribs, and one of the things that was just conspicuously absent was nobody had a bookcase, any books in there, except for, I'm going to call his name, Jermaine Dupri. He had magazines on his table. No one else had a magazine or a bookcase, and they were taking you through the crib. So I imagine that you would have, you know, some books. You come in my house, you trip over books in the hallways. My guest room has books. I've got books in the attic. I've got books that I've rotated. I got books in the living room. I got music books. I got books everywhere, and that is fundamentally the problem. You can't think critically, and you can't think your way out of things if you can't read. So I have dedicated a lot of my time once I found that out. It was a very shocking revelation for me. And so once I found that out, I immediately began the process of helping college students by, you know, understand, challenge, and how can I put the word I'm looking for, but, you know, excel over standardized testing. So standardized testing has left a lot of young college students out of the ability to compete for graduate school programs. And more about that later when I write my book, how I got into law school and passed the bar exam with more points than I needed to actually pass. So I needed a 276 to pass, and I had a 291. Why? So I'll take that up at a later time. We're talking about standardized testing because that's very important. But tell you that if we have a community that cannot read, they won't be able to get information even when they can't get it in their households. So the household has no books, but the school has books. Are we getting the kids to the school? And it's something amazing about frustration. Sometimes you can get so frustrated, right, that you become violent. Now,
yes.
Everybody does not have that experience. But sometimes when you just can't get your point across, no one's paying attention to you. I've seen this on videotape with my clients. You see them in a moment and you say, that can't be my client because he's sitting here in my office reception area like a choir boy, like a choir boy. And then I get this video footage of him going down the street. He's shooting, he's cursing, he's choking, he's fighting, he's carrying on. And in my office, he looks like a choir boy. What happened? So I'm finding that, you know, we're trying to, as a community, control the violence, but we have to start with where does the violence come from? And I contend that it comes from frustration. And it will come from frustration if you don't know the strategies. You know, there's a book out called The Game of Life and How You Play It. It was written in 1920. It's a good book. And those of you listening want to get it on Amazon. And I want to tell you that the name of the woman, but I'll butcher it. But it's The Game of Life and How You Play It. And that would be true for our communities. Our communities have to start with education on everything, life itself, relationships, why we must have an education in this society, and how it helps us to avoid the court systems where I spend most of my time. As you know from the past and talking to me, I believe in vetting relationships. You know how I feel about that. I don't believe in getting into relationships and serious until I've properly vetted everything around you. And it doesn't have to be, an excruciating Spanish Inquisition, but there are just some things I'm just not interested in. You know what I mean? And I find that to be true among my friends. So as a lawyer, I find that my clients suffer from certain deficits that really worsen their condition socially, economically. And you can't get them out of the system because they're not making the right choices of who they keep company with.
I've got a question.
This is a good time. Okay.
I've got a question because the issue came up about people who are in abusive relationships and they continue the cycle of abuse. They were groomed to be abused. And I know you've seen this pattern where people will stay with someone who's hurting them because they maybe think that's normal behavior because that's how they were raised. They were in a household where they were hit, and so they end up in a relationship with someone who hits them. How can someone see the signs if someone is perhaps having in their background that frustrated response of hitting because they don't know how to express themselves, because they don't have the education to express themselves, because they're frustrated because no one listened to them, because perhaps they were hit? What are some of those signs? And I know we've talked about, you know, look at how people respond when they're angry. And, you know, if they the first time they hit you should be the last time because you say goodbye. But some people don't. They don't know that within themselves they've been conditioned to accept that kind of behavior. How does one observe if this is someone that they're serious about and that might be a person who is subject to violent behavior if they are in a situation where they're angry or frustrated? How can you see the signs of that?
We've got two problems there. One, can you see it? And two, do you want to see it? So you got two problems there. So you've already described an environment that they come out of. The possibilities of someone getting out of that environment could be slim to none. So you're talking about, if you're talking about trying to save the ones that are on the fringe, well, those are the ones that are in my office. And I just told you how they got there. They were basically neglected as a child, or they didn't have the proper information. And you know how I feel about the proper information. And the only way you can grab it is if to know you need it. Now, there's another group that knows that they need some kind of way to determine, like, am I in a relationship with the right guy? How long have I known him? Have I known him more than 90 days before I start really hooking up with him? Do I know how he was raised as a child? You know my favorite question. You know, what was it like growing up with your mom and your dad? You know, what high school did you go to? Those two questions right there will get you a novel on someone. Then you got to ask yourself, what do I see? But the group that you're describing is a group that is out there on the grace of God. And I just got to keep it 100 with your listeners. As a criminal defense attorney, whenever you get a file and your client says, I did not write this, but I signed it, you know, so many fundamental things are missing. So many fundamental things are missing in your life that it's just hard. You know, in Georgia, I think it's Georgia or North Carolina, they have a plea bargain called the Alford plea. The man just couldn't prove he was innocent. So he had to take a deal for life in prison because if he were found guilty of the murder, he was going to get the death penalty.
Wow.
It's called the It's called the Alford plea. The criminal defense attorneys listening to your radio show right now know exactly what I'm talking about. And every state
what
differs.
Happens if a person takes a deal like that and somewhere along the line, the real killer confesses or more evidence is found? Have they signed their life away? It's like, we can't bring this case up back again because you confessed, you know, whatever.
Pretty
is that what happens?
Pretty much you can always bring a case back if you have brand new evidence that has never surfaced before.
Mm-hmm.
In most states, but you're asking me about the situation in a North Carolina state court. And a lot of the listeners and people out there today don't realize in South Dakota, you could get probation for murder. But in Illinois, you're not going to get it. You see? Every state is entitled to its own law. Okay? All right. Now, let's go back. If new evidence is presented, especially physical evidence, witnesses who were hiding in the bushes or, you know, on the sixth floor at the time watching it all happen, then that would be that would be one thing. But if you don't ever have that type of clearly unavailable testimony at the time, yes, he's in jail for life. Yes.
Mm.
In North Carolina back then. I don't know if it's true now. I don't even know if they're even using the Alford plea because I've never had to use it. But the Alford plea was a phenomena that became available to anybody in any state because it was a Supreme Court case, if I'm not mistaken. And for those criminal history scholars out there or law history scholars out there, let me put this in play right now. I stand corrected if you call in and provide, you know, other information. But that's the problem. It has always been the problem. Education, the fear of education, dumbing down of America, that's actually a book. Mediocrity promoted in our community, that's in the book Cast, The Origins, hand me that book right there. The Origins of Our Discontents by Isabel Wilkerson. She was the Pulitzer Prize winner of the book The Warmth of Other Suns, and she was definitely Oprah's Book Club 2020 for this book, Cast. Her book, The Warmth of Other Suns, is a Pulitzer Prize winner, okay? This Cast, C-A-S-T-E. So let's talk a little bit about that, and this will help. In the book, and I'm going to do my best to articulate this because I might very well not be doing this, so I stand to be corrected if anybody's listening out there, like Isabel Wilkerson herself, who was at one point a Chicago-based investigative news reporter for an East Coast paper. Cass is her latest book, C-A-S-T-E. You can get it on Amazon, Cass, C-A-S-T-E. I advise everyone to get that book. Two, there's class and there's caste. Caste means something permanent. Class, you might be able to move. You might be able to move economically with your education and your PhD and your doctorates and everything. And then you have a green book experience where someone non-black has to drive you around Mississippi to your concerts to keep you in order for you to survive your tour. Everybody remembers that from the book, The Green Book, right? Starring actor Mahershala Ali. So when I talk about these things, I'm talking about things I have seen, read about historically. I love Dr. Gates' Finding Your Roots. I don't watch it just to find out about Ben Affleck. I watch it because I'm looking at his research. It is impeccable. And it leads you to other things in a historical context, because what was happening when, Ta-Nehisi Coates, what was happening to his relative in 1842 or 1796, and what was going on? Did they have automobiles then? Did they have electric lights then? That's what the thing I like most about Dr. Henry Gates Jr.'s show on PBS, Finding Your Roots. Well, she does the same thing, Isabella being the she. She does the same thing with her two books, Cass and Warmth of Other Suns. And that's S-U-N-S. When we understand that we have a class issue in this country and a caste problem around the world, you will then understand that we are reacting to something that we almost can't articulate. But you can articulate it, standing class, C-L-A-S-S, and how it plays out in this country, and caste, C-A-S-T-E, how it plays out in this country and around the world. The oldest caste system in the world comes out of India.
Yes, I was just reading about that. I was just reading about the fact that they've got some violence issues because those who have been stuck in the lower caste are tired of being mistreated and denied education, as you've talked about. When you won't give people access to higher education, and so they're stuck in the minimal means of earning a living. They're stuck in the poorer sections of town. They're stuck in a system of being treated badly because they have less and they're not given access to education so they could raise their status and change their caste. So there's a lot of anger there. We're going to take our last break. Wendy, if you can hold on, we'll be right back because I want to talk further about the frustration that is expressed when you realize you don't know enough to do anything to change your condition and how that
and
translates in, a 15-year-old or a 14-year-old going out and carjacking somebody. How does that frustration translate into that kind of behavior? So we'll be right back.
And therein lies the problem.
There it is. And we'll be right back after this quick break. So we want you all to stick and stay. Don't stray away. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
The Female Solution Global Radio TV Show invites you to an invigorating conversation with our team of hosts Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Time. Start your week with Monday Morning Mindfulness with Zelda Speaks. Tuesdays, Self-Care with Jody Susan. Wednesdays, Repairing Broken Families with Naima Latif and co-host Kareem Hamid. Thursdays, Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. And Fridays, Health and Well-Being with Beata. Saturdays, tune in 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Time. First Saturday, Success Strategies with Jana. Second Saturday, Wendy Williams Esquire on Relationships. Third Saturday, Move Around with Deborah. And fourth Saturday, Wisdom with Mama D. Join us Sundays, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Time for Soul Purpose Healing with Beata. Call in and comment 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak to the host and be a part of the solution.
What happens when a group of people are kidnapped from their homes, smuggled away in chains, and held captive in a foreign land where they are tortured, raped, and forced to perform hard labor by the lash of a whip and under the constant threat of death? Slavery, the African-American psychic trauma. What happened to the doctors, writers, scientists, builders, educators, and spiritual leaders from Africa's golden age? Who did they really capture and sell into slavery? Are all African Americans suffering from psychic trauma because of a conspiracy to hide their true identities? Do you have psychic trauma? Take the test on page 22 of the book and see. Order it online today at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. And get your personally autographed copy of the book, Slavery, the African American Psychic Trauma.
Tax are higher than ever. Every day, thousands of our residents leave Chicago to shop in Indiana. Jobs are being lost, and businesses are relocating. Let's find a way to lower our taxes to encourage residents to continue living and shopping in our city. Let's rebuild. Let's restore Chicago. Vote for me, for mayor of the city of Chicago, and I will work hard to find solutions that matter. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for Mayor.
Are back. You're listening to and watching the Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. I'm Naima Latif, and we have been taking a look at this upsetting trend of youth violence, carjacking, robberies, just general acts of violent behavior, mass shootings. There's something inside of people that is exploding. Where did it come from? Well, of course, we've spoken earlier with filmmaker Valerie Goodloe, who's exploring this situation in her upcoming film, Before Your Time, An Unprepared Journey, and speaking to families who have suffered either as the parents of a victim of violence or the parents of a perpetrator of violence. And either situation is painful, but it comes from somewhere. And too many of us are seeing the results of neglect. We shared with you the decision of a Texas school district to bring back paddling in the schools. They figure if we can spank the children and parents give their consent, then we'll see a change in behavior. But does hitting an angry person really make them turn peaceful? I don't see that happening. Has it been working for us so far? No. But one thing that has happened, perhaps, is when you are educated and you have skills and you can work your way out of a difficult financial situation. But what happens when you don't have the tools and don't have the means and don't have the opportunities? So joining us is attorney Wendy Williams, candidate for judge, Cook County. You'll see her on the ballot this upcoming election, June 28th, punch number 176, right? And she has been in the courtrooms handling family law, even handling criminal law, and certainly seeing the results of children who have not had the best home environment because parents have not been emotionally stable enough to provide it. So, Attorney Wendy. We've got some callers on the line, and I know they want to give their reflections on things. But when you see us with this caste system that we've had here in America, very strongly race-based class, caste and class system, and many young black males that you've dealt with, that, as you pointed out in your example, the person who couldn't even read the statement that they signed. How possible is it for a person to work their way out of poverty and into another class if they have a record, if they have a background, if they have been in the criminal justice system? I know, you know, many have advocated for some kind of, you know, programs in the prisons, but how possible is it for that person to actually get out of that situation if everybody in their surroundings is still in it, their friends, their family? Is it possible to change your class and your caste if no one else around you has made any changes? What do you advise for people who may be in that situation?
Well, if you recognize that you are surrounded by an environment that is detrimental to your life, then you automatically know what to do. You automatically know what to do. It's the ones that's in the situation cannot recognize that they shouldn't be there. I hope I'm not trying to play on words here. Let me say it another way. Who doesn't know that it's a crime to break into someone else's home when they're there or when they're not there? How can you not know? And if you don't know, then now we're talking about mental illness. We're talking about hardcore major felonies that I deal with. Rape, robbery, murder, attempted murder, child molestation, sexual assault on children. I'm generally dealing with a group that does not understand you cannot burglarize someone's house. They're only concerned about some immediate need, oftentimes, that has not been met. Or there's a mental illness. Hold on, let me finish. There's a mental illness factor. So it's going to be one of the two things. Either you don't know no better, as my mother would say, or you don't care. And sometimes you don't care because you might be mentally ill. You know, it's really a circular situation. Now, I can go on to talk historically about other countries and how they were able to correct the issue without just incarcerating the entire social economic structure and or doing worse than just incarcerating them, okay? But some of the more, how can I say, enlightened governments and people of certain countries have just chose to re-educate their people. And there's certain sacrifices. Maybe the liquor store may have to close every day at 4:30 as opposed to staying open until midnight. You understand? Maybe school is from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. And you don't go out Monday through Friday until your homework is done. And maybe you just have fun on Saturday mornings. And Sunday, you're back on the track to get more information, education, hopefully love, to rehabilitate an entire socioeconomic structure or strata that is creating more generational problems than they're solving. You get what I'm saying? So let me put it in, yeah, and maybe summarize it. Re-education is what's going to be necessary if you don't incarcerate and then subsequently rehab. Maybe some type of mental illness has, you know, mental health has to take place. Some type of substance abuse, you know, treatment, domestic violence classes. Maybe these should be in the school. Maybe this should be in the school. Maybe this should be in, because if you're not going to get it at home, believe it or not, the schools are not, the schools are not responsible. No, no, no. The schools are not responsible for that. Now, it would be nice if they were.
Somewhere there has to be some kind of healing work for people who are coming out of bad situations, coming out of bad homes, coming out of bad environments.
I know.
Yeah.
Okay,
we got some calls on the line. Let me see if
I
can open up some mics.
I'm going to jump. Naima, let me jump and run because I am campaigning right here in Cook County.
Okay, well, give us a minute. We got a caller that wants to ask you a question before you go. Area code 407-701. I believe you got Viata, our Friday host, on the line, Grand Rising, and you're on with Attorney Wendy Williams. You can give her your thoughts real quick before she gets to her next stop where she's got to campaign for Cook County judge. Go right ahead, Viata.
Well, hi there, Wendy Williams. So nice to hear your voice and your wisdom and advice. Thank you for showing up today to bless us with all this knowledge. Appreciate you so much. And be careful out there. But you might have remembered in San Francisco back in, I think it was 1978, I'm not remembering the date, a man by the name of Dan White killed Harvey Milk and Mayor Moscone. And his defense was a Twinkie defense, I think they called it. So when I was listening to the conversation today, I couldn't help, it was 1978, that's when it was. So the Twinkie defense was used and really substantiated by the fact that this man had a poor diet, basically, of high sugar. So I think when we are looking at ways, solutions to this problem, inner city problem, childhood problem, violence, all that, we got to look at the diet. These kids are eating a bunch of crap, a bunch of chemicals that is changing and influencing their behavior. I've watched my grandchildren's behavior change based on what they're eating. You know, their dad wants to give them a lot of junk food, and I just watch. I don't say too much anymore, but then they're screaming and yelling because they can't stay on the tablet for another hour, and they've already been on there a couple hours. So this diet thing has to be researched or addressed, I think, along with all the other possibilities or problems and childhood problems. I heard earlier again about Tina Turner mentioning the reason she tolerated all that abuse was her childhood situation. So we got to address the childhood diet now, in my opinion, especially with me being in health and well-being. That's big, and I don't know all the solutions, especially in the urban area, taking junk food out to schools, for one, that might help. Coca-Cola is out of the school system, as well as all that other junk food. They've done that in several high schools, and I think they've done studies to show an improvement. They might even have a ban on bringing that type of food in because it is affecting their behavior, I think. So that's my comment, and thank you, Naima, for this very enlightening show today.
Well, thank you so much for chiming in, Viata. Well, before you go, Wendy, is that part of the caste system where in lower-income neighborhoods there's no healthy food in the local stores and the schools don't serve healthy lunches? Is that part of the caste system of keeping us not able to think clearly and therefore not able to perform and therefore getting put out of school and therefore ending up in jail? Do you see the tie between that? And is that something fixable?
Well, education can fix a lot of things. Information can fix a lot of things. So it's how we receive it and who's giving the information to us and when we receive it. We need information early on. I would say anywhere from let's say 4 years old, no later than 4 years old, you have to start receiving the kind of information that can save your life at that, really at that. In the household, there has to be demonstration. Well, obviously, it's not in the household. The problem with it starting so young is that now you're not distinguishing between what you learned at home. I once heard a man say, I can send my children anywhere to do anything because I established their identity before they left my home. And that started as early as zero. So he established their the strength, the education, the wisdom, the knowledge, the understanding, the eating habits, Beata, the sleeping habits, the exercising, the, you know, all kinds of things that can be established. But when you're coming out of a household where none of that is available to you, you know, how to choose a mate, how to get into relationships, knowing when you're in the wrong one, learning how to take as many precautions as you can before you find yourself losing your freedom or your life because you have, you're constantly making the decision to be, all of that comes out of the home. And I am not happy to tell you that, you know, everybody ain't going to make it. And I know, Naima, you spend a lot of your time and efforts as a community person. You're wonderful. Don't ever change. And all of those of you who are with the Female Solution, don't ever change, because you have taken on the daunting task to raise the bones out of the desert. And and I work in that environment, black, white, Hispanic. I've done it all. 2 state licenses, one in Colorado where the state is 99% non-black, and a state like Illinois where the county is predominantly African-American within the inner city and in the county, the most densely populated area. So I see the contrast. I see how you get probation for sexual assault in one state, and here you start at a minimum of 6 years, and if there's a gun involved, it's even more. So there's no fear that, you know, how do you redirect the behavior when the child is being influenced by its initial environment, the first teacher at the breast of his or her mother, and now that experience has to compete with all that you learned in your home was wrong. Everything you learned in your home was wrong. And you don't, now you are helpless against an environment that says, we will take your freedom and your life if you keep behaving this way. And you turn around and you say, well, what's the other way? I've never seen it.
There it is.
I didn't know I need to know how to read and write, because one day a police officer may write my confession and I didn't even read it to know that I didn't say that.
Wow.
You see? So it becomes really, really a frightening experience. And then vice versa. You're out here creating an environment. It's a routine traffic stop, and you tell me how you get shot in the head. It's a routine traffic shot. The police officer said, please, sir, get back in the car. That was the last thing the police officer said. The next thing you know, you're wrestling on the ground in the grass. I scratch my head sometimes. I said, how did we get here?
I
always ask, how did we get from a traffic stop? I made a left turn without putting on my signal, and 7 days later, they're having a funeral. What happened?
What happened?
As a lawyer, I always have to ask people, what happened? Why did you make that decision? I asked the police officer, why did you make that decision? It happened that you reacted like that. I asked my clients the same thing.
Do they
what
know?
Happened that you reacted like that?
Does the police ever know?
Know.
I think to them it's a reflex. You know, fear reflex that's been ingrained. We got a caller that wants to make one last comment real quick. Bianca, you had another question or comment before our guest goes? Go right ahead.
I was going to tell Ms. Williams she is 100% right as far as I'm concerned as a grandparent. We have seen my last grandchild go through the process, graduated Dale with double majors, and he's been under my tutelage since his father died when he was about two. So what you're saying is absolutely right. How do that person end up with a bullet hole in his head? Yeah, it's true, because he was wrestling with the police officer moments before trying to take his gun. And surely if you had took his gun, you wasn't going to immediately offer him a bottle of water. Yeah, but society nowadays don't look at things like that way. It's politically motivated, and we derive these type of emotional responses like we hear. You know, Naima is harping on the Three Rivers Texas School District. The district voted to start back tallying the children. Well, that was the parents' decision. The parent, like you made mention, from the moment of birth. That's the parents' decision of what goes on with their child. And it's luckily, because I can take my hat off, because you got parents that can't stand up, come forward, and make those type decisions, what's best for their children. Thank you very much, ma'am. If I was in your district, you would get my vote.
Well, all right.
Thank you so much. And I might be in your district. I'm in Cook County. And if you live anywhere in Cook County, you can vote for me. Punch 176.
Does Cook County extend to St. Louis? How far does it go?
It sure don't extend down to Louisiana.
Well, then you know what? Why don't I just stop running for judge and run for president? That would make more sense.
There you go. All right, now.
No, you don't want that stress. You don't want that stress.
Yeah, gray hairs.
You know what? Because to be honest, I would hire you as my chef, and that would take care of all of that. See, because you would make sure I would have no sugar in my diet, no high fructose, no high corn syrup. See?
Right.
And a lot of meditation and lots of meditation.
And that's
you're
right.
Right.
You would meditate with me after each session with Congress.
You gave a panel then.
And then I can get a full body massage.
And a glass of wine at the end of the day.
Well, I don't drink alcohol as a norm, but I do.
Right.
But what I'm saying is I would need a massage, a swim exercise class, then I would sit down and meditate with Beata. And then Beata would prepare one of her wonderful aromatic meals with all the right ingredients, you know?
Hey, you could come out of the office without having a head full of gray hair like everybody else does when they get done.
There's always Clairol, honey. Don't worry about that. There's always Clairol. Only my hairdresser would know for sure.
There you go. Well, we've got to go, and I know Wendy's got to go and continue. You'll see her on the ballot, number 176, running for judge in Cook County. And, of course, you need to be out there voting. We need to have people who can make decisions that have a clear head and some common sense. So, Attorney Wendy Williams, I'm going to speak into existence, soon to be Judge Williams, Wendy Williams. We're looking forward to some great sharing of wisdom, and we appreciate your sensitivity. Thank you so much for joining us today, and we'll look forward to hearing from you again. Thanks for all who participated.
We've come to the end of our show today, but you can hear every show in the archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. You can also hear today's show on the Female Solution Facebook page. Go to www.facebook.com/the-female-solution. Leave your comments about today's show. You can always reach me on my website at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. Watch our TV shows. listen to our radio shows, order our books, and be sure to get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to thank all of you who participated in today's discussion. And to our global family listening from all around the world, we say thank you. To our family in China, Sheshe. India, Zanyaba. Japan, Arigato. Korea, Kamsanida. Russia, Spasiba. Germany, Danke. Poland, Jeong Kunyong. France, Merci. Spain, Gracias. Italy, Grazie. Egypt, Shukran. Ghana, Medasi. Nigeria, Eshe. South Africa, Ngiyabonga. Senegal, Jeret. Kenya, Asante. Israel, Toda. Pakistan, Shukriya. Afghanistan, Tashakor. Saudi Arabia, Shukran. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you. And may peace be upon you and the mercy of God and God's blessings.